Good morning. What's your story? I'd like to begin by sharing with you a vignette from my story. Growing up, I had the good fortune of experiencing a decent amount of success in things like athletics, academics, even socially. I was well liked, but one thing I didn't experience was a real sense of meaning and purpose in life. I tried to fill an emptiness that I often felt inside of me with the fulfillment that I thought would come from accomplishing great things and being admired by people. And for me, athletics became the way to get both. I was especially fortunate in that I was able to play on several successful teams and receive personal honors. But I can say without hesitation that the greatest experience, the most profound feeling of emptiness of my life, actually came on the heels of my greatest moment of personal achievement. Can you relate to that, I wonder? What's your story? I know at least one person who can relate to this, albeit from an entirely different and much higher level. In 2005, Steve Croft from 60 Minutes interviewed this person. At that point, he was only 27 years old, but he had already won 3 Super Bowls, his second Super Bowl MVP. He had just signed a $60 million contract, was dating supermodels. Of course, this person's name is Tom Brady. And in this now iconic interview, Tom said this very vulnerable confession. He said, "Why do I have 3 Super Bowl rings and still think that there's something greater out there for me? I mean, maybe a lot of people would say, hey man, this is what it is. I reached my goal, my dream, my life. Me, I think, God, it's got to be more than this. I mean, this can't be what it's all cracked up to be. I mean, I've done it. I'm 27. And what else is there for me?" To which Crawford responded, "What's the answer? I wish I knew. I wish I knew." So Tom Brady had that same experience, except at a much greater level. I've heard it called destination sickness. You strive to get somewhere, and then you get sick when you arrive. Have you experienced that? Again, what's your story? I know at least one other person who's experienced destination sickness. And if you can believe it, he experienced it at even a higher level than Tom Brady. You've already heard his interview. He calls himself Solomon, the king of Israel, but typically refers himself in this letter, refers to himself as Koheleth, the teacher. He says in his confession, "I built houses, I planted vineyards for myself, I made myself gardens and parks, I made myself pools from which to water the forest of fruit trees that I planted. I bought male and female slaves, I also had great herds and flocks, silver and gold, singers and the delights of the flesh, and many concubines, 300 to be exact, and that's on top of 700 wives. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure." And what does he conclude after all of this? Tasting all of this pleasure, he says, "Behold, all was vanity and striving after the wind, and there was no profit under the sun." He says elsewhere, "The eye is not satisfied with the seeing, nor is the ear satisfied with the hearing." And it's not just the chasing after pleasure that left Koheleth empty. He details similar journeys that he was on that were related to work and achievement, as well as his quest for knowledge and wisdom. And when he gets to the end of those stories, again, he says, "All is vanity and chasing after the wind." Apparently, this experience that I experienced as a teenager, that Tom Brady experienced as a 27-year-old, and that Koheleth experienced through much of his life, is not a new phenomenon. It's been happening for millenniums. What about you? What's your story? Do you ever feel like you're chasing after the wind? Do you ever find yourself thinking, feeling or acting as if I could just get that job, or if I could just get my first million, or if I could get published or get my PhD or become a partner or get that corner office or win that national championship or sign that professional contract. If I could just get more sex, I would be happy. I would be joyful. I would be satisfied. And when you reach your destination, you're sick, empty, and unsatisfied. What we have in Ecclesiastes is a sagely wise old man looking back on his life and using his story like a goad to direct us away from making some of the same mistakes that either he made or he saw others make. It seems fitting for this setting, by which I mean in particular Harvard, where we come to fellowship with dead people who live on through their and who continue to influence our lives through the books that they have written, to listen to the words of the teacher. The idea of sitting down with Koheleth reminds me of a young man who shortly before his college graduation sat down with the former Prime Minister of Great Britain, William Gladstone. The young man, Gladstone asked him, "What do you hope to do when you graduate from college?" The young man replied, "I hope to attend law school, sir, just as you did." "That's a noble goal," said Gladstone. "And then what?" "Well, I hope to practice law and make a good name for myself, defending the poor and outcasts of society, just as you did." "That's a noble purpose," replied Gladstone. "Then what?" "Well, sir, I hope one day to stand for Parliament and become a servant of the people, even as you did." "That too is a noble hope. What then?" asked Gladstone. "Well, I'd hope to be able to serve in the Parliament with great distinction, evidencing integrity and a concern for justice, even as you did." "What then?" asked Gladstone. "Well, I'd hope to serve the government as Prime Minister with the same vigor, dedication, vision, and integrity as you did." "And then what?" asked Gladstone. "Well, I'd hope to retire with honors and write my memoirs, even as you are presently doing, so that others could learn from my mistakes and triumphs." "All of this is very noble," said Gladstone. "And then what?" The young man thought for a moment. "Well, sir, I suppose I will then die." "That's correct," said Gladstone. "And then what?" The young man looked puzzled. "Well, sir," he answered hesitantly, "I've never given that much thought." "Young man," Gladstone responded, "the only advice I have for you is to go home, read your Bible, and think about eternity." Just like Gladstone, who pushed this young man to think about his life beyond the borders in which he normally thought about his life, so Koheleth prods us to think about our stories both within and beyond the boundaries that we normally set for that story. In the story that Solomon tells us in chapter 2, the setting for that story is life under heaven. It's a phrase that is used interchangeably with life under the sun. It occurs in all 12 chapters of Ecclesiastes, 38 times total, to make a point that the setting for most of his story is life under heaven, where there is nothing but earth and no God. The main character in that story is none other than Solomon himself. This is evidenced by the fact that the words me, myself, or I are used 54 times. The conclusion of that story, this small vignette that we've read, is that Solomon's story is that life is vanity, and it's like chasing after the wind. But what we find in Koheleth, what we find him doing at the end of this story and throughout this entire text is pushing his reader beyond the boundaries of their life under heaven perspective. And it is in these spaces where joy and meaning began to emerge in the text, where the setting changes from life under heaven and the veil between heaven and earth gets pulled back, and the new character that emerges onto the stage of the story is God. He not only does it at the end of chapter 2, and we'll come back to that, but in chapter 3, Qoheleth enlarges the story by saying that God has set eternity in their hearts. And he ends the book with an ultimate statement of what gives meaning to life by saying, "For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil." Not long after my emptiest moment of my life experience, someone asked me a Gladstone-like question. He said to me, "If you were to die tonight, Pat, and find yourself in front of God, and he said, 'Why should I let you into heaven?' what would you say?" I said, "I don't know." And he said, "Well, how sure are you that you would get into heaven?" And this was my first, the week after my first week of college, I said, "You know what? I think I might have been able to get in last week. I don't think I could make it this week." He gave me a book to read, and I did. In fact, I read it twice, and when I did, I came to an understanding of a much larger story than the story I was living in. I came to an understanding for the first time of the Christian gospel, the God who loved me so much that even though I failed to love him and failed to love others, and despite my narcissistic and hedonistic proclivities, he was willing to lay down his life and save me and forgive me and restore me to a relationship with him. And that all that was left up to me was to turn from trusting in myself and instead trust in him to come into my life and to forgive my sins and to make me into the kind of person he had created me to be. And so that night I actually prayed a prayer inviting Jesus Christ into my life for the first time. That decision did transform my life, and I will say that it has brought a sense of meaning and purpose to my life that no amount of success or achievement was ever able to bring. But I will also confess to you that I still find myself daily falling back into old habits of chasing after the wind, of making idols out of things like pleasure and money and knowledge and trying to make a name for myself. I feel like a man in a story that a friend of mine once shared with me, a very successful investment banker who worked crazy hours and had way too little time with his son and wife. He took them on a vacation to Mexico. He got up early one morning to take his son out fishing, surrounded by the beauty, the warm tropical air, the fragrant ocean breeze, and magnificent, constantly changing sky as the sun rose over the horizon. His son experiencing for the first time the sensation of a fish hitting his line. Yet in his mind, he was somewhere else. As the fishing slowed down and they came back to the dock, they arrived at the same time that a Mexican fisherman, peasant person, had come back with also a nice catch of fish. Curious, the investment banker struck up a conversation through a translator with this man and his son, and who, by the way, this man's son was with him as well. "What are you going to do with all those fish?" he asked. "Well, I'll go to the market and sell a few. I'll take 3 home with me. With the money that I make at the market, I'll buy a few things to bring home with me for lunch and for dinner. When I get home, I'll wash up. My wife will cook up the fish. Then we'll eat as a family. We'll take a siesta. We'll enjoy the rest of the afternoon and eat again in the evening. And then tomorrow I'll get up and do the same thing." The investment banker probed for some more details on how much the fish were worth, how many he typically caught in a day. He began working the numbers in his head, and then he replied, "You know, with a $50,000 loan, you could buy a fleet of small boats like this. You could hire a couple dozen guys. Within a few years, you would be making bank. You could probably pay off that loan within 15 years, and then you wouldn't have to work another day in your life." When the interpreter explained this to him, the person responded, "And then what would I do?" Well, he said, "Well, you could do what I'm doing right now. You could come down here on vacation. You could get up early with your son. You could go out fishing. After you're done, you could take those fish." "Forget it," he said. "I'm convinced that I'm way more like that guy than I wish I was. All the elements through which I can experience God are here, and are around me. But just like this guy, I'm too distracted by chasing after the wind to slow down, to step into a moment, and to recognize and thank God for what I do have. Hear again Kehelet's words at the end of the passage Andre read. There is nothing better for mortals than to eat and to drink and find enjoyment in their toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God, for apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? For to the one who pleases him, God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy. Like Gladstone, Kehelet not only pushes us to think about our story or a story that is beyond the borders in which we normally think about life, but they also push us to think differently about our life within those boundaries. Kehelet invites us to stop and step into those moments, like a good meal or a conversation with a companion or a sunset. If he were writing today, I don't doubt that he would talk about stepping into that moment of throwing that game-winning Ivy Conference championship-winning touchdown pass or nailing a three-pointer. His counsel would not be to an athlete, stop playing your sport and become more religious. I think, in fact, he says in chapter 9, verse 10, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. Kehelet's counsel seems more in line with someone like Jim Elliot, who says to his sister in the movie Chariots of Fire, God made me for a purpose, but God also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure. For Elliot, the Olympic champion, his sport was not an idol that he served and saw it as an end in himself, but it was a medium through which he worshiped and experienced his creator. So my exhortation from the book of Ecclesiastes is for us to be able to step into those moments with gratitude rather than hubris. Recognize and appreciate and thank God for the ways he does mediate a knowledge and an experience of himself through things like pleasure, meaningful work, knowledge, and good friends. This is what Kehelet so eloquently says when he says, this is God's gift to you. I can tell you that there is nothing that has done more in the last 3 years to serve like a goad in my life and to steer me toward an experience of God than the words of Kehelet. To step into a story bigger than my story, to stop chasing creation and start experiencing the Creator. So I guess the real question I want to leave you with is not what is your story, but what story do you want to live in?